This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 28th at 11.05 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like the Trump administration will cut funding from another program that people love, like a puppy rescue agency. Is there one of those?
I hope so. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's civil but irreverent look at Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up, we've got Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and some not-so-special budget cuts. And we'll check in with John Kasich, who had to be just a little disappointed with Robert Mueller.
Again, I look at Washington. I don't spend my time thinking about, you know, Donald Trump's lawyer or Robert Mueller. I leave that to the people that make all this big money on television, okay?
Wait, what? Isn't his job to make money on television now?
I thought it was.
But anyway, we'll figure it out in a moment.
We will. But right now, we're going to take the pulse of the Ohio voter. And it's a good time to do it. Lots going on in Washington and the State House. And, of course, the presidential race is taking shape. And there's a new poll out done by Baldwin Wallace University. The headlines, Ohioans do not like gasoline taxes, clear majorities support some new gun restrictions, and most Ohioans disapprove of Donald Trump's job performance. For more now on that poll, we're joined by Lauren Copeland, the Associate Director of Baldwin Wallace's Community Research Institute. Lauren, welcome to Snollygoster.
Great to be here.
So this is not what I think you would call a typical poll. You asked a lot of softer questions, things like, does the president make you angry or hopeful? And could you get along with a new neighbor who was a member of the opposing party? What was your goal with this poll?
So this is a student-driven, faculty-mentored project that we do every spring. This is the third year that we've done it. And the students work with our media partners to come up with the topics and design the questions under my supervision and the staff at the Community Research Institute, of course. This poll is more so focused on issues and sentiment than it is on horse race politics.
Did any themes develop? What was the takeaway, you know, looking at the poll as a whole?
You know, I think the poll is really interesting in terms of the 2020 elections. We see that support for Donald Trump is lukewarm, despite the fact that Donald Trump won the state over Hillary Clinton by 10 percentage points.
We should stop and mention that this was taken before the Mueller report or the summary of the Mueller report came out, correct?
Right. So This poll was in the field between March 1st and March 15th, and that was before the Mueller report came out.
Okay. But so before then, temperature that was lukewarm towards Donald Trump.
Correct.
And so you talk overall about being lukewarm. You asked a lot of questions about feelings about Donald Trump, questions like, does he make you angry? Does he make you anxious, enthusiastic, hopeful? Can you dive a little more into those findings?
Sure. So some of the students were really interested in this idea that politics have made people very anxious, perhaps because of the unpredictability of Donald Trump's behavior, or perhaps because they pay attention to his tweets. And so we were interested in seeing how people feel about Donald Trump, and we wanted to go beyond just asking basic questions about whether you approve or disapprove of his job performance. And so we asked about two negative feelings, whether he or something he has done has ever made you feel anxious or angry. And then we asked about two positive feelings, about whether he's made you feel hopeful or enthusiastic. And for the anxious question, we have some interesting results where we see, for example, that 46% of Republicans have said that Donald Trump sometimes makes them feel anxious. 44% of independents also say that Trump makes them feel anxious. Of course, Democrats were the most likely to say that he makes them feel anxious. About 46% of people said that he frequently makes them feel anxious.
Do we have any comparison to past presidents? Has this question ever been asked before? Did Barack Obama make Democrats or Republicans feel anxious? George W. Bush? Can we have anything to compare Donald Trump's feelings about him to other presidents?
To my knowledge, there aren't questions like that for other presidents. I know the American National Election Studies, which is run out of the University of Michigan, sometimes asks these sentiment or affect questions, but we have never polled on previous presidents in this way before.
You can argue that no other presidents have made folks feel as anxious as Donald Trump has either. I guess it's a legitimate question to ask respondents.
Is there any way to tell, based on the results of this poll, whether Donald Trump will win Ohio? Certainly if the election were held now, but looking at 2020, what does this say about his chances in Ohio?
You know, it's hard to tell because when we asked people whether they would prefer a generic Democrat versus Donald Trump, we also included the options of answering unsure or neither. And so if you just compare people who selected the Democratic candidate to Donald Trump, it looks like that the Democratic candidate could do fairly well. But a lot of people also selected neither or unsure. And the percentage of people who selected neither or unsure would be enough to swing the election towards Donald Trump. You know, I do know that the Democrats don't plan on spending a lot of time in Ohio in 2020, at least in terms of advertising dollars. And Nate Silver at 538, for example, has already put Ohio in the Leans Republican column for the 2020 Electoral College.
The Republicans in your poll firmly were behind Donald Trump. I think it was 76% of Republicans approved of his job performance. What does this say about John Kasich, who left here as a fairly popular governor overall?
Right. So John Kasich is a really interesting political figure because for most of his career, he was a staunch conservative. And as governor, he passed a lot of bills or signed a lot of bills that deregulated gun restrictions. He also vetoed the heartbeat bill, which is before the legislature again. But then once Trump became elected, or at least during the 2016 primaries, John Kasich started to move to the left. And in September, we actually asked people if they would like to see John Kasich run. We also asked about whether people approve or disapprove of the way he's doing his job. And he had about a 50% approval rating, and that was about equal between Democrats and Republicans, with independents at about 44%. But overwhelmingly, people said that Kasich should not run for president in 2020. And if you look at approval ratings, the next question in the survey asked about approval ratings for Donald Trump. And in this, for Kasich, you see 53% of Republicans saying they approve of his job. But then when you ask about whether they approve of Donald Trump doing his job, 80% of Republicans say they approve of what he's doing.
Yeah, the GOP still is sticking with the president, and I'm sure that they're even more so now that the Mueller report has largely exonerated him, at least on the question of meddling in the election with the Russians. Getting to those statehouse issues, big surprise, Ohioans don't want to pay higher taxes, namely higher gasoline taxes.
Right. Well, I guess that's not so much of a surprise since most people don't like paying taxes. But what was interesting about this question is that we noted in the question wording that the funds would be used to pay for infrastructure and road repairs. And this is a time of year where people really think that the roads need repairs as their tires slam into potholes, for example. Nevertheless, they still don't want to see the gasoline tax raised to repair the roads.
Let's turn now to guns. You mentioned that John Kasich, that he signed off on some gun measures early in his governorship here in Ohio. He did later veto a self-defense law that was overridden and became law anyway. Where are Ohioans on gun control measures right now, according to your poll?
According to our poll, we see broad support for minor gun restrictions. And we had actually asked this question last year around the same time. We had thought that support for gun restrictions would diminish in this poll because Last year, we asked the questions right after the Vegas and Parkland mass shootings. So you would think, you know, with those shootings, people would be more supportive of gun restrictions. But then a year had passed, and there hadn't been major shootings right before this poll went out. But nevertheless, we saw the same levels of support for a statewide ban on guns such as the AR-15 and having a mandatory waiting period before people could take guns home. We also asked about whether people would oppose a ban on the sale of guns to people who have been charged with domestic violence. This is a federal law, but not one that we really have in Ohio, and about 74% of Ohioans said that they would support this ban.
Yeah, it's so-called red flag, red flag laws. Yeah, 53% oppose the heartbeat bill, which is before lawmakers, as you mentioned. Again, abortion continues to be a very divisive issue, but, you know, a narrow but clear majority of folks do not think that the state should ban abortions when the fetal heartbeat is detected, perhaps as early as 6 weeks into a pregnancy.
Right, and this question was interesting because usually you would expect to see Republicans line up in support of this bill and Democrats obviously voice opposition, but large percentage of Republicans actually oppose this bill. And I had a student actually look at answers by religious service attendance, and he saw that that was a better predictor of attitudes on abortions and the heartbeat bill than party ID, which we thought was really interesting.
You mentioned this was run by students. What different perspective do they bring to polling, younger folks, presumably, than your traditional, you mentioned Nate Silver and those old crusty pollsters? What perspectives do the younger generation bring to polling?
Well, I had one student who was really interested in this idea of forgiveness and whether people think that public officials should resign if they engaged in unacceptable sexual behaviors while in college versus when they were in office. I'm not sure that set of questions would have been included if I had written the survey by myself. The students were also more concerned about including questions about opioid addiction and the use of Narcan or Naloxone. But what was really cool is that they were able to pick topics that were of interest to them. So the student who made the question for the heartbeat bill, he was very interested in this idea of abortion. They were also interested more so in these feelings about Donald Trump. And, you know, I think you would agree that the questions tapping into emotions about Donald Trump might not appear in a typical poll. They were also interested in, I have some international studies majors in this class, and they wanted to see whether Ohioans perceived a difference between refugees and immigrants. So we had asked the same set of questions about refugees as we did about immigrants in terms of whether people think that they increase crime rates or threaten the American way of life. And the surprising finding was that people don't differentiate between refugees and immigrants when it comes to these concerns about refugees and immigrants coming into our country.
Yeah. Interesting.
Lauren Copeland, the Associate Director of Baldwin Wallace's Community Research Institute. We've been talking about the new BW poll that was released this week. Lauren Copeland, thanks again.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
It's been a few weeks, but because of everyone's favorite Uncle Bob, Bob Mueller that is, we're breaking out an old segment.
Ohio, Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control to Major Tom. Help me. Take your protein pill. Oh, no, not that. Here we go.
It's John Kasich GPS, the segment we used to track our former governor as he was parading around the country for the latter portion of his time in office.
Yep, now that GPS seems to have taken him to ancient Greece.
Some people have said that you're becoming more of a philosopher than you are a politician. But I think we need more philosophy. We need more art. We need more poetry.
He's not actually in ancient Greece. He, as far as we know, he's still bunking in the CNN studio for his new gig there. He's also continuing to push to the middle, which is probably a good idea at this point.
Yeah, it probably is. With Robert Mueller's report, or at least the summary provided by the Attorney General, seeming to clear the president of any potential collusion with Russia during the 2016 campaign, any hopes that Kasich had of challenging Trump for the 2020 Republican nomination seem to be cooked, so he is staying right in the political middle.
If you're extreme, I don't have time for you now. I got to work in the middle. And I don't mean the mushy, comfortable middle. I mean people who do want to seek the truth, people who do want to be rational.
Not the mushy truth. What's the mushy middle?
The mushy, comfortable middle. I don't think mushy is very comfortable.
I mean, mushy is a very loaded term. No one wants to be in the mushy, comfortable middle. I don't know. He's not quite the middle. He's still a Republican, at least as far as we know. I haven't checked his voter registration lately, but I assume he's still a Republican.
He was waiting for that report, and that report did not have any, certainly did not have any smoking gun that would have seriously damaged Donald Trump's standing in the Republican Party. In fact, it probably helped his standing in the Republican Party. So I think that officially ends John Kasich's hopes of becoming the Republican nominee for president in 2020.
I still encourage him to run because it would be good fodder for our podcast. It would be interesting to cover a presidential candidate. Sherrod Brown has dipped out, so we need some excitement here on Snollygoster. We need some kind of hometown boy or girl to make a run.
Tim Ryan is still considering it, isn't he? The congressman?
He's not going to run. He's got no name recognition.
Right.
Either way, let's take a short break and we will be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, time now for our final segment, the Snollygoster of the Week. If you've been listening to us for a while now, you know we like to poke fun at those shrewd, self-serving politicians, but we do have a slight dilemma.
Right. For this week's Snollygoster, we have nominated Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, and she might just fit the Snollygoster definition a little too well.
You've heard me say this before, so it's not new. I believe that this budget is cruel, and I believe that it is reckless. I believe that it will hurt middle class, working, low-income families that most need our help.
That was Representative Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut. Earlier this week, DeVos made her 2020 budget proposal, which she has gotten a lot of flack for.
She certainly has. It would cut $8 million from the National Technical Institute for the Blind. Pell Grants would lose $2 billion, and $18 million would be cut from the Special Olympics, which is where our focus turns next.
Do you know how many kids are going to be affected by that cut, Madam Secretary?
Mr. Prokhan, let me just say again, we had to make some difficult decisions with this budget.
Again, this is a question on how many kids, not about the budget.
I don't know the number of kids.
It's 272,000 kids. I'll answer it for you. That's okay. No problem.
272,000 Special Olympians. I mean, $18 million is a drop, half a drop in the federal budget. It's just this. It makes no sense.
It seems symbolic. It seems like a terrible. It seems like I don't know what they're trying to send a message, and it's just It's bad. It's really not a good look for that administration.
Combine that with Donald Trump's mocking of a disabled reporter from the 2016 campaign. That's what the ad's going to be. You know it. Politically, it makes no sense. I mean, it makes no sense from a human standpoint either, but politically it makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, they make the argument that the Special Olympics is a self-supporting venture at this point. They have about $100 million in other money that compared to the $18 million in federal money. But I'm with you. It's not a good look, and this is happening at the same time. They want a $60 million increase for charter schools. I don't know the likelihood of that passing with Democrats controlling the House, but I'm shocked that they would do this.
It's not going to pass. Congress will restore that money just the way Congress will restore the funding in all likelihood for public broadcasting, which the Trump administration has zeroed out for many of the same reasons. They think public broadcasting can be self-supporting. George W. Bush did the same thing. Congress tends to restore the funding to these popular programs after the administration cuts it, namely Republican administrations cut it.
Well, Betsy DeVos, either way, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week's show, or you just want to send us a note to vent or complain about the show or give us a nice compliment, please do that. You can send that note to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, if you get your podcast on iTunes, be sure to leave us a good review. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.